sleep, Mom. Come on, go to sleep.
And do me a favor. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired.
Well, what the hell are you saying, Doss? You bruised half your body sleeping.
I sleep pretty hard.
Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
Hey, it's Brian.
And hey, it's Murdoch. Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
We are thestoryguys at gmail.com to get involved in the show. Ben, he writes and he says, hey, your recent episode concerning Oasis trolling Bon Jovi reminded me of another quote-unquote rivalry that I was never sure was real. 311 and Creed. Did they actually hate each other? Was there really a physical confrontation? Inquiring minds need to know.
Did you like the Paramount Plus commercial from the Super Bowl where Drew Barrymore goes, and it's Creed? Did you see that?
I don't know. I don't think I saw it. They're totally back on tour, though. They're playing shows across the country with Switchfoot opening half of them. I mean, who's going to argue with that?
It is a great story. What Ben is asking about, I know about this story, and I have a confession to make about this, about something, and I'm going to do it eventually which I haven't told you.
Oh, my goodness. We're just going to wait on this? Okay.
It'll happen very, like, I know when I'm going to tell you, and
okay.
We never have talked about
good grief. All right. Listen, this is an old-fashioned radio tease. Keep listening for Murdoch's Big Confession. Let me ask you this.
Coming up in 7 minutes, I got a confession to make.
Sorry, that's a different band. So if you had to choose a side in the Royal Rumble match that is Team Creed versus 311, which side are you choosing?
Can I pass?
Okay.
Can I choose Stone Cold Steve Austin the winner of the Royal Rumble?
This is a great example of our age difference. Given my age, I have fond memories that involve music of both these bands. So when we talk about bands from a certain period in the late 80s, like Winger or Nelson, you have a relationship with them, even if you weren't buying their albums or T-shirts, because of when it was in your life.
MTV was my thing. Like, that was it.
So
at MTV,
you flash forward 9 years, which is our age difference, and you're now looking at 98, 99. And now I am having that same experience, but with bands like 311 and Creed. So first, regardless of what any person wants to say, if you were of a certain age at a certain time, Creed's My Own Prison record was a game changer. That album kicked ass and rocked worlds. And I will never forget how much it rocked everyone I knows world. Also, it had the added allure at the time in my social circles of launching Creed into this, quote, are they or are they not Christians conversation, which was a place that many a band before and after ended up in youth group circles, like U2, Collective Soul, Lifehouse. I mean, look at that name. The Fray. I mean, even like Imagine Dragons. All these bands get dragged into that conversation.
I totally hated that band. I hated Creed. I hated their videos. I hated their songs. I hated that I was working at a hot adult contemporary radio station that went from playing the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and Britney to playing Creed and Disturbed and Lifehouse. Like, it went rock. It was so weird. I always thought that Creed had Christian overtones from the videos.
I mean, they did.
Almost like these Christ-like things that were how Scott looked in the videos.
We'll talk about Scott. We'll talk about some interviews he's done. And this is, he has said, yes, and it was all very intentional, but it was mostly him. The rest of the band was like, dude, what are you writing about? Okay, let's talk about 311 for a second. As for 311, I hung out with guys in high school that liked pot. And so I have a particular memory of cruising through a parking garage in Memphis with my buddy who used the singular moniker Button. That's what we called him. It was just his last name. And Amber was blaring from the speakers. So I have some good memories of 311's music. And it always puts a smile on my face. But hilariously, the first time I ever heard 311 was a Target, as in the store, CD sampler that I'm sure we've talked about before, because this was a huge deal for me. I got it when I was, I don't know, I must have been 10, because I think this was right around the 93 record, maybe a little bit later, maybe 12. And it was quite important to my formative years, this album in general. So it had The Cardigans on it, covering The Boys Are Back in Town, which I don't even know where that came from or if it was on another album. It was just on this random sampler. And I didn't know
it was on another album.
I didn't know The Boys Are Back in Town, like as a 10-year-old or 11-year-old or whatever. And so I learned the loungy female fronted version
right.
and thought it was beautiful. And then someone showed me Thin Lizzy and I was like, this is even better. But
yeah.
It,
yeah.
it also included the 311 song Down, which of course becomes yeah. a massive hit and kind of breaks them. But I found myself captivated as a young man with the line, have you ever made out in a dark hallway? Like, to this day, I saw at Louder Than Life, I saw 311 perform for a few minutes of last fall. And I was waiting for him to yell, have you ever made out in a dark hallway?
And I heard both these bands at college radio. And Amber was something that was very impactful, not only were I, in college radio, but I heard it a lot. I obviously, with Creed, I had people trying to get me to add the record, and we never added it and never played it. So that was our...
Before we break down the particulars on either of these bands, let me just jump to the core of this conversation and establish something. We should read a headline from Rolling Stone. This is from an article by Shirley Halperin, dated December 1st, 2005. The headline simply, and you mentioned that you read this in real time when it came out, Scott Stapp and 311 brawl. Read the sentence. Read the first sentence of this article.
Yeah. Baltimore's Harbor Court Hotel on Thanksgiving night. Members of Los Angeles Rockers 311 on a day off from their national tour got in a fist fight with former Creed frontman Scott Stapp in town to promote his solo debut, The Great Divide. How'd you like that big radio voice?
That's really good, man. I feel good about all of that. So a fist fight. It's not like, hey, they got in an altercation. Hey, they yelled at each other. Hey, there was a skirmish. No, it was a fist fight, to quote a band that I once saw play in a club that you once played bass in, it's a good day for a fist fight.
Oh, my gosh. It happened. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so we established a couple of things. It's three members of 311.
Yeah, and Scott.
And just Scott, right? So the three members of 311, Chad Sexton, he plays drums, S.A. Martinez, who comes in to sing, but then like Nick Hexum is doing most of the singing, so he's around to sing, but he also does turntables, I think. And then Peanut, yes, P-N-U-T, who plays bass
player.
But the only member of Creed, like you said, is Scott Stapp. And apparently, this is a real thing. But before we get into what happened, let's go backwards. And both of these bands have a really interesting story and trajectory. Let's figure out what got us here.
So where do you want to start? Which one do you want to do? Who do you want to talk about first?
Okay, let's establish the chronology of these bands. Because I think I'm not sure people put the... I had to think about it. So 311 is a band for like a half dozen years before Creed is. And their first full-length album on Capricorn Records actually drops a year before Creed's even formed. Of course, Creed gets formed by a college-age Scott Stapp and Mark Tremonti.
And this is important because supposedly Scott tells 311 at some point before this altercation that we were headed towards in this story that Ben asked about, that in the early days of 311, a young Scott Stapp actually climbed on stage at a 311 show in Florida, and 311 didn't kick him off. And in the 311 telling of the story, Stapp told them that incident helped him start his own band,
which is so good. Like, I love the poetry and all of that. Like, okay, so let's start with 311, because that's where Scott would want us to start. You know why they're named that?
Yes, I do. It's a police code
for what?
Being naked. public indecency, yeah, is 311.
So I guess a skinny dipping incident that one of their friends had. Do you know any of the police codes purely from pop culture? What comes to mind?
Yeah, 187, murder.
Of course.
Eazy-E.
Yep.
Van Halen's 5150.
Yeah, what is that?
5150 involves like a person that's like an unwell mental person.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so these guys are probably... 311, one of the more well-known acts to come out of Omaha, Nebraska, right? They're not a ton. Their Saddle Creek Records, I think, comes out of Omaha. But for the most part, mainstream stuff, 311's probably the biggest. And they're this like weird hybrid of all these bands they like to listen to. So they're like a little bit De La Soul, a little bit Descendants, and they really build this thing the old-fashioned way. They just start making tapes in their basements and selling them at their shows, and they get pretty big locally and then regionally.
You know who produces their first record after they get their deal? Super nerdy music conversation.
Who?
We're about to do. His name's Eddie Alford. And so
the Yes guy?
Yeah, he produced
Didn't he do Emerson, Lake, and Palmer too?
Yeah, and so this is the 70s. Yes,
this is
not
the same guy who does 311?
Like super proggy, yes.
Yeah, so yeah, that's amazing.
The story is that Nick Hexum, who started the band, starts just sending tapes out to try to find, to get attention in the 90s, and somehow one gets to Eddie, and he's into it.
Oh, my God.
When Capricorn Records signs 311, Eddie becomes part of the package that helps land the deal. And not only does he produce the records, he helps them build a home studio to do it.
Oh my
and
God.
Just so I want to make sure we've talked about Capricorn Records here on the show before, one of our episodes. The lineup of people that have been on this label are extraordinary. Government Mule, the Allman Brothers, Kitty Wells, Kenny fucking Chesney's on Capricorn Records. What the hell is that shit? A band called Lynyrd Skynyrd, Percy Sledge, Widespread Frickin' Panic, and Marshall Tucker with their flute, all on the same label. But, and 311, a modern day band.
And he does the first two records, right? And those aren't really the records that casual fans are going to know, because the stuff that hits the radio and makes them huge happens on the third record. That's 1995. That's a self-titled album. A lot of people will call the Blue Album if you follow the band. Notably, the producer on that record is also an important guy in rock history. That's Ron St. Germain. And he's worked with a ton of people too. Sort of a more traditional route though. Jimi Hendrix, he'll work with Tool and Soundgarden and U2 and Mick Jagger. And he will eventually work with Creed and Scott Stapp. And this is like something we got to point out, because this is another commonality that, according to the witnesses in the story, the guys in 311, Scott Stapp will mention that, I mean, it's mentioned that they have this in common and that they will like talk about the fact that they share a producer on this day before they get in the fight.
And right about that time, 311 is starting to break wide. Creed is getting started in Tallahassee by a couple of high school friends who both end up at FSU, Florida State University. That's Scott Stapp and Mark Tremonti. He's the guitar player that people, he's the other kind of well-known guy in the band that really people know. They hold auditions for drums and bass and start playing as a cover band in dive bars.
And one of their first gigs in what they feel like is like a real club is at this place called Floyd's Music Store in Tallahassee, owned by this guy, Jeff Hansen. And this guy was, I think, sort of like looking for his foothold into the larger music business. And he gets it when Creed plays his place. So here's what happens. He hears them sprinkle in a couple of originals, and he thinks they're decent. And so he goes to them, and he's like, listen, I'll manage you guys. And he ends up finding them $6,000 to record the album that will literally become known as My Own Prison. And they, like 311 before them, will just sell this album around Florida independently on their own. Yeah. And they start to become pretty well known.
And even with this album ready to go and selling, they still aren't an easy sell to the big labels. They get turned down a few times before there's a new upstart outfit being run by a guy from the distribution side of the business. And his wife hear the disc, and they fly down to Florida to watch the guys play, and they are super impressed. And so this is how Creed becomes the band that will help launch Wind Up Records. Are you ready for my confession now?
Oh my God. It's about Wind Up Records?
Yes, it is.
Go for it.
So at some point when I was in college, even though I wouldn't add this freaking record, I got a job offer.
From Wind Up Records?
Yes.
And you didn't take it?
No, I took it.
You took it?
And then I told my parents that I was dropping out of college.
Oh,
and I was selling my car.
Oh my God.
And I was splitting, and I was moving to New York, and I had a job. And they had an intervention with me like I was a cokehead.
Oh, my God. And how do I not know this story? We've been friends for like 15 years.
I don't know. And so I lit a match and threw a gasoline can and pretty much like destroyed a bridge with people. And then I didn't take the job. I was given the thing of D for diploma, just finish the diploma. And it was, in retrospect, the best idea. And I did end up having one interview for a music industry job when I moved to when I was planning on moving to New York, and I killed the interview. I slayed it. I lost the interview in the post interview questions, which is crazy.
So wait. What were they going to have you do at Windup?
I was going to be doing radio promotions, so I'd be doing the same thing that people were doing to me, as I'd be calling college radio people trying to get them to add the Creed record or whatever other crap that wind up.
Oh my God, dude, this is some sliding door shit. Like, you could have ended up being the guy who helped break Creed in radio. That's wild, man. So. Now,
I think they're already broken.
Would we still know each other, you think? If you had taken that path? Maybe not. Maybe. Maybe you would have called me one day when I was in radio.
I think that everything that I do somehow happens for a reason. So that's my weird thing. But I needed to, I haven't said that out loud.
You've never told me that you, well, and here's what I will trade back. It's not a personal story about me, but my dad had a similar incident where he made plans to go to do sports broadcasting. And I forget exactly what happened, but he basically had this whole plan and went and told his dad, and his dad got in a fight with his dad, my grandpa. And similar sort of thing. Like, my grandpa either pulled money from him or something and like changed the path he ended up taking in life. And he ended up finding the ministry after that. So wild stuff, man. Yeah. Wild stuff.
Do you know the interview I had for the other job that would have been amazing? I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I didn't get it. And I was shocked that I didn't get it.
What was it?
I was interviewed. It was a radio promotions, but it was an independent company. So it was an indie thing that worked with any label. Mm. So people would just throw money at them to add. Yeah. It's like everybody that needed extra help or whatever.
Right.
And I knew there were two people interviewing, and I knew one of them who is married to a friend of mine now. And I thought I slayed it. I mean, I thought I killed it. And then it was like months later, I was up way too late at night with somebody, and they told me why I didn't get the job.
What'd you do?
The interview was over, so it was questions about stuff that had nothing to do about work.
Uh-oh.
And then the other person, who I did not know at all, asked me what I thought about horse racing.
Uh-oh.
And I answered that question wrong.
Listen, if you're going to lose a job over something like that, it's not the right job for you. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not a, now in our vernacular now in the corporate world, we'd call that you're not a right culture fit. And if that's the case, you would have been miserable. So I guess it works out, but it is wild the way that you can, lose something over something like that.
I stand up to what I said too. My dad owned a horse. Those things are terrible. They're fucking beautiful creatures and we're fucking mean to them. So I said some nasty shit about people who are mean to horses and stuff. And I'm talking to some girl whose dad owns like fucking a horse farm or something. Yes, I lost. I fucked up both those things. But anyway, so.
Okay, so Windup Records.
We got to Windup Florida. We got metal-ish. Yeah,
okay, so we got to Jeff Hansen and we got to Windup Records. And I bring both of those guys up again just to say this, which is when we talked about Limp Bizkit, another Florida band, we talked a little bit about how their success gave some really significant success to some other people, right? That later will not be associated at all with Limp Bizkit as part of their team. And this is what happens, right? With Creed, Stapp and Creed make other people's careers while making their own success. Jeff Hansen goes on not only to work with and manage tons of bands that are in this same genre, like Seven Dust and Saving Abel and Full Devil Jacket and Tantric. Shout out to Louisville. He'll also be the author of Paramore's 360 deal with Atlantic Records. Imagine being the guy that wrote that. Nobody thought that band was going to have a 25-year career. He basically helps launch 14-year-old Hayley Williams. Like, he's the guy who is responsible for that, which, that's tricky. And Windup Records, of course, goes on to build a pretty significant roster, Evanescence, Seether, and a whole lot of stuff that you don't associate with that scene now that goes on to be successful too.
Yeah, and so now I think the discussion becomes the trajectories of both these bands and their fan bases.
Yeah, much right? Like you,
a little different.
When offered the job at Windup, these guys have paths in front of them. What do they take? Creed's first few records, they don't just sell a few bajillion copies, right? I mean, they're huge, but they're also well-reviewed. Critics like them, everybody liked Creed. This is the thing that I think we've tried to retroactively erase. But if you go back and look at the press, everybody fucking loves that band for a period of like a certain number of years. Their third album, Weathered, certified platinum 6 times over, debuted at number one on the Billboard Top 200 and remained at that spot for 8 weeks. This is a record which Creed notably shares with a band called The Beatles.
Yeah, and 311, meanwhile, does really well, but on a much slow and steady path. They put out a new record every couple of years, and each album will have a few singles that do great at modern rock radio, and a few things will hit top five on the Hot 100. They tour, and they build that live show enough to where people want to go see 311. It's like one of those things about they're not a hippie band like Widespread Panic.
They develop a
following where people
They're hippie adjacent. Yeah. And there's a few people who have done this, and it becomes bread and butter. I mean, you can have a career forever if you can be a hippie adjacent band that can cross over to both sides. It's huge.
But so they were working it, and they're a big band without being everywhere, but Creed at this time is now plastered.
Everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Everywhere. I've thought a lot about this, and I've heard Scott talk about it. We'll talk about a significant interview he did fairly recently later. But, and I think he's right, and this is sort of what I thought too, which is some of this is a product of the times. In the mid to late 90s, it was possible to become overly famous. And I think for the last 20 years or so, we haven't since the Creed era, we haven't seen this much until the last few years, it popped back up with Taylor Swift. I remember having a conversation with my buddy Shaq years ago where he said, I think we're done with superstars because the internet has sort of destroyed the Madonna, U2, Creed, big band that's everywhere. And until Taylor somehow figured out how to conquer the internet, I was in agreement. I think she's the first person to have done it in a long time. There's just some people who don't like her because she's everywhere. And now she's infiltrated football. And she is literally everywhere. This used to be how it was all the time. The internet made this a rare phenomenon because fewer gatekeepers, more access to more options, fractured audiences. But it used to be every year or two, we just have a handful of artists and celebrities who were like the poster on every magazine, in every conversation, on every late night show. They were the stand-ins for a scene. We had U2, we had Nirvana, and for a period of time in the late 90s, we had Creed.
And like a lot of other artists, they got real big, real fast. And in retrospect, this all played out by seeing Scott Stapp's behavior, which is what Ben's letter was really about too.
Yeah, when you get that big, there's bound to be a performative public backlash at some stage. And it's just the cycle has to make room for the next productized person or rock band or whatever it is, right? And offsided, one of my favorite pieces of music journalism is the 2012 piece that Chuck Klosterman wrote about going to see Creed and going to see Nickelback play on the same night across town from each other in New York. If you've never read this, it's in the show notes. I read it like once a year. It's just beautifully written, well-written rock and roll journalism. And it is called A Night with the World's Most Hated Bands. Highly recommend it. But the takeaway, and this was in 2012, is that these guys still sell tickets and they're still pretty solid performers. So what gives with the difference between box office receipts and then a public narrative? Like what you say to your friends, but like meanwhile they're selling. They sell 20,000 tickets. Who's buying the tickets?
For Creed, in this case, a lot of what we're seeing that's happening here could be blamed on Scott's car wreck that he had.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So you're talking about like the cycle breaking. So they're really at the height of this. And then there's this weird breaking point for them. And in a nutshell, it happens in April 2002. Scott's on his way to a video shoot in Florida, and there's stop-and-go traffic, and I guess he's driving, and he slams on his brakes, and the car behind him hits him, and he's not wearing a seatbelt. Cops show up. It's ruled as like a minor accident with no injuries, and the adrenaline wears off in the next day or two, and Scott starts to feel like he's hurt worse than he thought he was.
And in the aftermath of this, Creed cancels 20 concert dates. And then MTV, if you remember how powerful MTV was in the early 2000s, when they played videos, reports on this accident in a way that calls into question the validity of the whole thing, because one of the biggest bands in the world just canceled 20 concert dates over something that seems like, by all accounts, to be a fender bender.
Creed already had some issues dealing with the media, and there is an interview that we're going to talk about with Scott from a couple years ago, and he says his version of basically what I just described about this idea of like there being a big band and then they sort of have to fall out of grace as part of a cycle. He blames that entirely on the media. And I don't know that he's wrong, because it is, I mean, that is sort of the disconnect. It's like you turn on the TV and somebody tells you, or a comedian or a late night host or somebody makes fun of this band. They, you know, they do a Scott Stapp impression. We're the Lot Open. You know, I mean, there's like an ongoing.
My fly's wide open. I mean, come
right.
on.
Right. There's mockery because it's ubiquitous. It's something everybody will understand. So you start to mock it because it's a touchstone and everybody understands it. And so he says, you know, when the media decides to turn against you, it's all over. And mm-hmm. it's easier yeah. for the media to turn against you when you give them fodder. And so if they're looking for it at all, and in this case, MTV is looking for the next big thing, and Creed is getting a little played out, and they're doing some things that make them look sort of stupid. And so they do this. You can read this in the show notes. They basically publish this article that basically says, he canceled 20 dates, and the police report says there was like $1,000 worth of damage on the car. Like, something's off. Like, this guy's an asshole is basically sort of what they're trying to say in the way that it's written. And it's made worse by the fact that there had been little incidences up to this point. There was this whole thing, and I don't know if you remember this, where members were mouthing off about Scott Stapp being a better vocalist than Eddie Vedder. Like, one of the other members, I think it was Brian. And he said something in the press about that, and that got really blown out of proportion. So when a couple of things like that start to happen, dominoes start to fall.
And then Stapp starts drinking more, which a lot of people knew about that. And now he has pain pills from the accident. And so those he's becoming to where he's relying on those more and more. And the final domino is this infamous Chicago show that's right at the end of the year 2002, December 29th.
Here's the Chicago Tribune, April of 2003. Quote, apologies weren't enough to stop four Creed fans from filing suit in Cook County Circuit Court April 21st over the erratic performance by grunge rock band frontman Scott Stapp at the December 29th concert at Allstate Arena. In seeking refunds for tickets and parking, the fans alleged that Scott Stapp, quote, was so intoxicated and or medicated that he was unable to sing the lyrics of a single Creed song.
And for those of you that are like, class action lawsuit, what a bunch of crazy people. You can dig through actual part of the court documents that we have in the show notes. But apparently he rolled around on the stage, and at one point he was just unconscious, like he kind of passed out. So your tickets and your parking, like, yeah, you got hosed.
Yeah.
Not because he was hammered. Yeah.
So, and what they make it worse. And this is the other thing. This is the thing that when you're caught in this cycle and the media is turning on you, you need really good PR people. And they just like didn't have them. And so in January, the band writes a letter to their fans in which they like don't take responsibility. Instead, they write, quote, for now, we hope that you can take some solace in the fact that you definitely experienced the most unique of all Creed shows. And this may become part of the unusual world of rock and roll history. Again,
and I remember that quote, dude.
That's not good. Like, I got to say, I got to say, not good at all.
I think that someone in the camp wrote that, and the band didn't write that either.
But that person stupid. Should be fired, because that was terrible. Right. That was terrible advice. I can see the cheekiness in it, but, like, that's not going to work. And basically, this is, like, the end of the initial run of this band. They officially announced a breakup in 2004. Stapp is sent off to rehab to try to get things under control. It's a mess.
There are many things that Stapp does during this period that are incredibly sad to see. As he starts self-medicating, as he is really out of control. And the bar fight Stapp makes and gets involved in makes everything much more worse.
Yeah, and this all starts to make sense, right? If you've heard this story, you see this decline happen. Now we're like, okay, let's get us there. It's November of 2005. Scott's recently released a solo album. So basically, as soon as the band says they're breaking up, Scott says, I'm going solo. Mark Tremonti starts another band. Scott releases this record pretty quickly, and he's in Baltimore to promote it. And meanwhile, 311 are touring on the new record at the time called Don't Tread on Me. And the night before, they'd been in Lowell, Massachusetts. And the next night, they were booked in Baltimore. But this is Thanksgiving, so they're chilling in a hotel watching the Lakers.
Ben, thanks for your letter. The story is they see each other sober that day. At least Chad Sexton from 311 and Scott Stapp do, and things are fine. As mentioned up top, they share a producer, and Scott was an old school 311 fan, apparently, who liked to get on stage. And when he got on stage with them one time, they didn't kick him off. He was inspired to start his band, Creed. So everything seems cool until he shows up wasted later.
So there are a couple of press reports that become the core texts for this. One of them is Rolling Stone. We already mentioned that, and that's mostly what we're pulling from. But if you see this tale mentioned on the internet, you'll often see the Associated Press reporting cited, and there's a couple of reasons for that. The main one is this line, quote, Stapp later came into the Harbor Court Hotel bar while Sexton and bandmates S.A. Martinez and Peanut were watching basketball on television. He stepped in front of the screen and said, quote, 311, I am ready to fight.
It's super funny, and I call bullshit. There's
you don't think it happened?
Nah, no way. I mean, he was out of control at this time, but it just doesn't seem plausible.
I mean, it's the Associated Press. The reporter from the Associated Press wrote, I mean, that's messed up, man. That's not just like, even like if it was the MTV.com, I would be like, yeah, it's MTV being taking a shot at him. But who knows? The way the Rolling Stone article reports it is slightly less sensational. Read that.
We had just finished dinner and we were at the hotel bar to watch the Lakers game when Scott Stapp walked in being very loud and obnoxious, Martinez tells Rolling Stone. In fact, one of the things he said was that he loved to fight. So he started doing shots and breaking the glass on the bar, almost hitting one of our crew guys. And I read the piece when it came out, and I'll read the rest of it to you. S.A. Martinez goes on to say, my wife and I moved to a table, and eventually Scott made his way over and sat down. He was looking for attention. Even before that, he had wadded up a napkin that he had lobbed in our direction. It was pathetic. We had tried to ignore him, but it was impossible. Then he made a pretty disrespectful comment to my wife, which I will not repeat. In no uncertain terms, the word fuck was used. Then that's when Chad, the drummer, walked over.
Now, remember, Chad's the guy who sees Scott earlier in the day. So when he sees, oh, God, Scott's in here, he's messing with the other guys, he's like, well, I'm the guy to break this up. Makes logical sense, right?
Right.
He goes over to try to defuse the situation.
And here's what he says happened. So knowing that we got along earlier, I kindly asked him not to disrespect anybody and remind him that we're all friends. And that's when he sucker punched me. He hit me right
in the face. Oh, my God. And that's when he sucker punched me. Good Lord.
And there's more. So this is what Ben wanted to know. This is the money shot of this whole episode. So when Scott punched Chad in the follow through, he hit my wife.
Oh,
so
my
then
God.
I threw my punch.
Oh, my God.
I think the last time I got into a fight was third grade, but it was an instant reaction on my part. Peanut also came over and he got sucked into it, opening up a scar on his right arm from a recent surgery.
What a detail.
Scott went down and his girl came over and sat on him to get him to stop, but he got up enraged, still wanting to fight. After 5 minutes, hotel security finally broke it up and kicked him out. Honestly, the hotel was really at fault for not kicking him out when he started throwing the first shot glass.
So that's in Rolling Stone. But you heard how the Associated Press report started. So they have this sensational line that Scott Stapp shows up and says, I am here to fight. But buried at the bottom of that story, they did have some journalistic follow-through because they went looking for the other side of the story. Like, okay, so 311's telling us this. We're not getting good answers out of Creed. What happened? So if you read the whole thing, you get to this line at the very bottom. Jonathan Jordan, director of security at the hotel, said the incident was captured on security cameras. He said Stapp was, quote, attacked by several members of 311 and that it took two security guards to break up the fight. It was definitely started by 311, Jordan says.
So within a couple of days, Scott is trying to refute the story.
And this is still archived on Metal Underground. I'm just going to read this article. Former Creed frontman Scott Stapp has responded to 311's account of his recent Thanksgiving Day melee with the group, which 311 claimed the singer started. This is a very unfortunate situation. However, there are two sides to every story, Stapp said in a statement issued Wednesday 12/7. I was at the hotel celebrating Thanksgiving and my engagement with my new fiance, we'll come back to that detail later, when the fight started. As the Associated Press reported and confirmed, So notice that was a publicist doing their job. I did not instigate this altercation. The Associated Press report Stapp referred to in his statement quoted a man identified as Jonathan Jordan, director of security at the Maryland Hotel, who said that the fight, quote, was definitely started by 311. Stapp's tour manager, Rob Kern, is quoted in Stapp's statement as saying that Kern spoke with the front desk of the hotel and they confirmed that Scott was not at fault. So what do you think happened?
I side with 311 for sure, because of all the things that Scott was doing at the time. Really dark time for Scott. And I did add a couple, at least one thing in the show notes to sort of see. It's this quick cut when Scott is on the celebrity poker thing and Howard Stern's wife is on it. And he's like being inappropriate with her. But like the things he said, like it's so out of control of how intoxicated he is. So eventually he had to come clean, go to rehab, and it's revealed that he had bipolar disorder.
Oh, wow.
There's several other things that he had done that were embarrassing. I don't know if you knew about all these things. I've added some other things in the show notes about other things about him. But in 2014, he released this video that was shot almost like in black and white, and it's really weird. And he said he was broke, homeless, and living in a Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
That people had taken his money from him. Yeah. Eventually, his wife, Jacqueline, they eventually got married. She was a former Miss New York USA, petitioned for divorce, saying that her husband had been, quote, doing so much amphetamines, crystal meth, and steroids that he had become a paranoid shell who had threatened to kill himself and harm his family, end quote. In fact, Stapp did try to commit suicide more than once, actually. In 2016, he tried jumping from a building, according to Billboard, but was, this is an amazing fact, was found by rapper T.I. groaning on the ground.
God.
What? Since then, Jacqueline's definitely stuck with Stapp, and the two have remained married.
This is unbelievable. And back to the night at the hotel, nobody presses charges. 311 lets this all drop. This obviously follows them both for years. God bless Scott Stapp for that time he tried to do an AMA on Reddit and the 311 trolls came after him. But as late as 2017, there was a news publication in Philly that got an interview with Martinez from 311, and they asked him about it again. And he said, do you have that in front of you, what he said?
I do. In 2017, these days, Martinez seems to feel a lot like what happened that night is water under the bridge. Quote, I never want to talk badly about anybody, he said. People are people, and sometimes your ego gets the best of you, and that's kind of all really I can say about the situation. I'm sure that he reached out to us to make amends. Things happen to people in life, and that's that. Inquiries placed with Stapp's publicist for this story were returned with no comment.
And so you brought up a lot of stuff about the gap, right, in between now and what happened way back in 2005 and all of the stuff he's gone through. And I didn't know much about it, and I hadn't really thought much about Scott Stapp other than as a punchline until I think it was you. Was it you who sent me the Theo Von interview?
I don't know who sent it to you, but you've watched it.
And you've seen it.
Yeah.
And I will say, it's rare for me to watch something and immediately become huge fans or reignite my excitement about two people at the same time. Like, I knew who Theo Von was as a comic, and you and I have spent a lot of time in the world of comedy, and so we're definitely familiar with him and his rise on MTV and all that sort of stuff. Always sort of thought he was an idiot. Definitely thought any podcast he was doing was probably not my bag. Someone sends this clip, and it is a 2-hour interview. I say clip. It's a 2-hour interview between Theo Von on his podcast called This Past Weekend and a sit down with Scott Stapp. It happened in like the fall of 2022. So it's a year and a half old at this point. After you listen to our shows, I marked some time on your calendar and listened to all 2 hours. It is one of the greatest interviews I've ever heard, hands down. I have so many questions about Theo Von's interview style because in some ways it is so genuine. And I'm like, he had to have studied how to do this. And then he says some dumb shit right in the middle of asking a really poignant question. And I'm like, I honestly don't think he knows what he's doing. I think he's just letting his nose lead because he's curious. He just gets, because of the way he approaches it, he gets Stapp to just fully open up. And I think Stapp's had a lot of therapy, but he gets him to talk about that 2014 period of his life. And it is unbelievable. But basically, in that video you're talking about is from his perspective at the time. But what was really happening, which he reveals, is that he had taken off from Florida in a truck doing all sorts of drugs, decided he was going to drive to California, and his family had no control over him. They did not know what to do except to cut off all of his supplies to everything. And yeah, so they basically cut off all of his money. And so he gets to a certain point where he gets stranded, like in Texas or California maybe, and
got a Holiday Inn,
literally has nothing. And they, and he's like, now he's going like, this was the wisest thing they could have done. Like, thank God they did it. But it is just, he talks about Creed's success and Creed's fall from success. He talks about, he does not specifically talk about the 311 incident, but he talks about so many things and how many things he's had to go through now and reconciling himself to be a father, which is a really interesting part of the whole conversation. And because of the way he talks, and this is where I'm getting, the way he talks about that period of his life, I think 311's story is 100% true.
Yeah. I do. I agree, too. I love Theo Vaughn's podcast, by the way. I've watched every minute of his episode with Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair.
Of course you have.
Because they're amazing. He asks the best fucking questions.
He's just he is like a little kid. Like, he just asks questions that you're like, I can't believe he asked that. But he asks it with such genuine kindness and curiosity that the person is typically just like, I guess I'm going to answer that. I mean, here was my takeaway. I got done listening to that interview, Mark, and I was like, I think I need to buy a ticket to the tour this summer. Like, that's how much it convinced me. They're like, I think I need to see Creed.
And the thing that I think everyone should understand that he talks about, too, is he talks about his childhood. And Brian and I, if you've listened to the show, we grew up completely different. His dad was Brian's dad was a preacher. My dad was an atheist truck driver. And I didn't know that people could be so mean to their children. They're religious. And Scott's childhood was awful. And that trauma is probably the reason that he got diagnosed with bipolar disorder at some point. Like, the trauma made him, he had a mood disorder at some point.
The one thing we never pointed out in all of this is the other reason everyone just automatically believed 311 is that 311 was like the chill, positive vibes band. You know what
Amber's
I mean?
It was the color of your energy.
Right.
Whoa.
Nobody wanted to believe that band was starting bar fights because they just seemed like the band that was like passing the doobie. So you were like, okay, look at these people. You got this guy who seems like he's like macho, got something to prove. And you got these guys who are like clearly like the dudes who were cutting class to smoke weed. I don't buy that fight was started by those guys.
Yeah, great letter, Ben, and thanks for listening to the show.
And if you've got a question you want us to check out, or if you just got a comment, if you want to tell us your favorite Creed song, I don't care. It's wearethestoryguys@gmail.com. That's how you get involved in the show. Instagram.com/rockandrollbedtimestories is an easy way to hang out. And wearethestoryguys.com. You can find out what we're doing there and find a whole bunch of other stuff in our home base on the internet. And until next time, Murdoch, what should people keep doing?
Keep telling stories.
Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories is a Story Guys production. The show is produced and edited by Brian Eichenberger. Get more stories, hear more podcasts, and book the guys for your conference or house party at wearethestoryguys.com. Copyright Boy Have We Got Stories Productions. All rights reserved.